Hi, it's Dina. We have something a little different for you this week. It's a conversation about what has become a major industry in Southeast Asia, based on scamming. We've covered a number of scam operations on Click Here. We've talked to people on the receiving end of romance scams, the so-called Yahoo boys in Nigeria, even dedicated call centers out of North Korea. This week, we're featuring an excerpt from the Underworld podcast, which is a show that covers, well, the underworld, organized crime, warlords, traffickers. In this episode, which dropped last year, host Sean Williams sits down with reporters Nathan Southern and Lindsay Kennedy to talk about how Chinese gangsters, crypto scams, cybercrime, extortion, and human trafficking have all come together and created a population of cyber slaves. And these centers of digital servitude have been popping up around casino towns in Southeast Asia. And just a heads up, in addition to being rather shocking, this episode includes some strong language. Take a listen.
On January 28 this year, a Bangkok local government official is checking the Facebook page of a volunteer group he's set up to help folks struggling financially during the pandemic. Among the messages, there's a disturbing video from an 18-year-old Thai girl, her eyes swollen from crying. "I'm in a building opposite the karaoke bar," says the girl. She travelled from Bangkok to the Thai-Cambodia border, she adds, where she's been promised a job in the seedy Cambodian casino town of Poy Phet. But everything has gone tragically wrong. Once across the border, she's been told her new role will actually be to scam strangers online. And if she wants to leave, her father will have to pay 40,000 baht, over $1,000. "I know everything, and I'm afraid that he'll kill me," she says, referencing the boss who has tricked her into this criminal world. "I don't know what he'll do to the others after this, and I don't know if I can contact you again. I've heard that at least 20 or 30 people have died." The official, Ekapop Luang Prasert, is bemused at first. Perhaps this video is a scam, he wonders. But the Thai teen sends location details and photos from her Cambodian compound. And in the coming months, dozens more trafficking victims share their own stories, sent into slavery in casino towns all over Southeast Asia, Cambodia, Laos, Myanmar. Each one has a tale of misery orchestrated by Chinese gangsters. Hotspots like Poy Phet and Sihanoukville in Cambodia and the Golden Triangle Special Economic Zone in Laos, the home of notorious casino, the King's Romans, are the worst hit, as the pandemic's halting of tourism forces local crooks to branch into even more violent crimes. These Special Economic Zones, or SEZs, are tax havens, legal no-man's lands, criminal black holes patrolled by private security instead of cops, where kingpins and gambling millionaires hold sway rather than politicians or local laws. These tales are just the tip of an iceberg of massive organized crime, deadly mafias, narco-trafficking, human slavery, and entire cities created just to serve a lucrative new market in cybercrime. The SEZs might just be the most lawless places on Earth. Welcome to the Underworld Podcast.
Hello, I'm Adam Fleming from the Global Story podcast from the BBC World Service. We are looking at Lina Khan, the face of the US government's battle to regulate big tech. She's already redefined the way we talk about monopolies. Now she's taking on the likes of Amazon and Meta. But who is she? And will she win? The Global Story brings you fresh takes and smart perspectives from BBC journalists around the world. Find us wherever you get your BBC podcasts.
Politics has never been stranger or more online, which is why the politics team at Wired is making a new show, Wired Politics Lab. It's all about how to navigate the endless stream of news and information and what to look out for. Each week on the show, we'll dig into far-right platforms, AI chatbots, influencer campaigns, and so much more. Wired Politics Lab launches Thursday, April 11th. Follow the show wherever you get your podcasts.
Blockchain, NFTs, AI. What does this mean for you and me? I'm Sherelle Dorsey, host of the TED Tech Podcast, where we bring you the latest innovations and biggest ideas in tech. Tech is evolving fast, and it affects our lives, from the metaverse to the watches on our wrists. You'll learn why people in AI make good business partners, about our future self-driving robo-taxi, what the next generation of Siri, Alexa, Google looks like, and a lot more. Find TED Tech on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen.
Hi, it's Dina, and this is Click Here. This week, we're featuring part of an episode from the Underworld podcast. They did a deep dive into the world of Southeast Asian cyber slavery, which revolves around casinos in a special economic zone in the Golden Triangle. That's where Laos, Thailand, and Cambodia meet along the Mekong River. It's long been an area with a kind of Wild West lawlessness. It used to be all about heroin and drug trafficking, but more recently, it's gone more tech. It's a center of scamming operations and human trafficking. And reporters Nathan Southern and Lindsay Kennedy traveled there in 2021 to see it for themselves. Now back to the show.
Hi, guys, and welcome to another edition of the podcast where we teach you all the life hacks you'll need to sneak into a Chinese mafia-run casino. I'm your host, Sean Williams, in Berlin. I'm a freelance writer, reporter, podcaster, and future consultant in German bureaucracy. And I'm joined today by Nathan Southern, a security specialist investigating conflict, trafficking, drugs, war, terror, and Lindsay Kennedy, a journalist, photographer, videographer focused on security and human rights. Nathan, Lindsay, pleasure to have you both here.
Thanks, man.
Thanks for having us.
So you guys are both in Glasgow, Scotland after a long journey from Southeast Asia. And I just want to make clear that the story I just led this show with is not my own. It's taken from a recent feature you both wrote yourselves for The Diplomat, about this giant, crazy network of so-called slaves for scams, and SEZ, some of which we've gotten into with our episode on the Billion Dollar Meth Lab. So, I mean, obviously you went on this crazy trip into the region and you've seen a lot of stuff. You mentioned to me before we came on that you actually went out in May, right? And you went to the King's, well, you went to the yeah. King's Romans Casino, unbelievably weird, bonkers place. Tell us a little bit more about that, because I assume it didn't all go to plan and wasn't just your average trip down the local gambling den, as I often do. What the fuck am I talking about?
So we got a truck and we drove over to Bokeo province, where it is in Laos. The truck actually broke down about 2 a.m. at the checkpoint into Bokeo. And we're trying to keep like a low profile, just acting like, you know, tourists. I got my backwards cap on, like, hey man, just here to see the casino. And then we break down and we spend the night with the Bokeo cops. We just got to watch them, though, and see that every single Chinese freight truck that comes through, not one of them was checked for anything. But every single Lao truck that came through, there was like a wee handover of cigarettes or sometimes energy drinks. That seems to be the new bribe for these guys. And then we eventually get to you know, nearer the SEZ, and on the way to King's Romans, they really, really pick up, and they stop you, and they open up the door, and they're like super excited, the cops, and they're like, "Ni hao," and they look at you surprised, like, because, you know, I'm not a Chinese dude, and they're like really surprised, and they go, "Oh, are you here to work?" Like, no, just here to visit, and then, okay, and they look really confused, and then we go on. And we go up to the gate of King's Romans, and the place is just like this city. It's like a small city, completely covered in barbed wire with like a shit ton of security all surrounding it. And the main gate is similar to the old scam place in Cambodia. It's just almost exclusively Mercedes G-Wagons with Chinese dudes with tattoos just driving through, flashing a badge, not getting stopped. And the only cars getting checked are the ones coming out. And they just check the trunks of those cars. We realize, all right, so you're looking for people who have maybe escaped. Mm-hmm. And we go up to the desk and we say, hey, we're just here to, you know, go to the casino. We're just, you know, love a bit of Baccarat or whatever. And the lady almost gives us a pass, but looks really, really confused. And then says, oh, no, I think you need to go to the other queue. Like, yeah, okay. So we go to the other queue, and then everyone is just a really, really kind of poor and kind of sad-looking Lao person waiting in queues. Maybe there's 100 of them. And all of their documents and all of their money seem to be held by these Chinese dudes with the black T-shirts and the tattoos again. And we go up, and the lady at the desk of this processing queue just asks her nationality and just says, oh, Indonesian? I'm like, well, no. And Ukrainian? No. And she went, oh, you won't be on the list yet. And I thought, we've not actually said our names. And we're trying to work out what was going on. And she said, it's okay, it's okay. Just sit down there. Someone will come and take your blood. And then we'll get you processed. And now, the thing that we heard about happening in Cambodia, which the Chinese authorities and the Cambodian authorities got really, really tetchy about, were these stories where people weren't making money in the scam centers. So they started taking them as blood slaves, so they could sell their blood for transfusions around the world. And that started to get back to China. Yeah, man. And it started to really freak people out in China. So they shut this down really quickly, arrested people that made this claim, right? And then we're looking around and like, oh, they want to take our blood. The only people going in are really parallel people with all their documents and all the money with these Chinese gangsters. And realize, oh, shit, we're in the trafficking queue. Everyone here is about to get trafficked in a cage.
We never go through that. Is that what we have to do after Brexit?
I'm like, maybe we should just like give it a go and see what happens. And Lindsay was a bit smarter and said, no, let's not get trafficked today. So we start talking to people like through Google Translate, and we're saying to the lady, like one woman's about to go through, like, are you sure you want to go in? Like, we've heard our friends have been told that they're not allowed to leave. And she looked like, not surprised, but like scared, and like kind of waved us away really quick. And then I tried to speak to some of the, what was essentially the traffickers on Google Translate. It was actually quite hard with Mandarin and English, but they were kind of willing to talk, and then they started getting kind of aggressive, and then we had to leave. And then we just kind of went around the outside, and we realized we couldn't get into the compound at all, and thought, all right, well, there's no way of getting in there. But on Google Maps, it's saying that the casino is busier than the normal. So they're saying that the casino was closed. It's clearly not. We were just not the right Chinese gangster to get in. And then we get to Thailand about 6 weeks later. And then it's opened up a bit more, and we were able to cross over from the Thai sides into King's Romans. And you just get a little speedboat, you go over, people go over to gamble for the day or eat tiger or pangolin or whatever it is they do. And then we get in, and just instantly you just see the slave compounds. They're the exact same way that we've seen them in Bokeo, in, you know, Phnom Penh, Sinutville, all throughout Cambodia, all throughout Laos. And they're the exact same, like, makeshift compounds that are built with barbed wire, all about a dozen stories high, and maybe about 10 buildings altogether. And the taxi driver is instantly like, that's the call centers. People aren't allowed to leave. And he also said that you have to have a special pass to go towards the entrance and the exit that takes you out to Laos. So yeah, the place is weird. It's more quiet. It's got a fake. It's got a fake Starbucks that also sells.
I've been to this place.
Have you been?
I've been to this place. Yeah,
it's fucking terrible, yeah, it's man. The menu though, I thought the Starbucks looked really good. It was just lowercase, not all capitals, or you wouldn't have even known. And you look at the menu, and they've got some, you know, Starbucks classics like a small handful of meat.
Don't you always have that with a latte in the morning when you get out for work? Beautiful. So in this slave to scam trade, how are people usually lured into doing what they're doing, and what happens when they step foot in the SEZ? I mean, like, how does the whole process go from start to finish of capturing these people and forcing them into slavery?
So everyone we've spoken to has been approached over social media in some form or another. Some of it's people who are already inside the scam centres are told then to try and recruit more people. But often it's just ads will come up that just say, like, there's a job in like admin or like online trading, but you get full training and it's like really good money and you get free accommodation and all this kind of stuff. But one of the sort of more pernicious things we've been hearing is that social media influencers who are really popular in Thailand and Vietnam and Cambodia, especially sort of like beauty influencers, that kind of thing, are being approached and asked to sort of talk about these great jobs that have come up inside the casino complexes. Yeah, and that's how at least some of the girls, especially girls that have been ended up in forced sex work, have been brought into this as well. And there's like kids as young as 14. We've talked to rescuers who have tried to get out kids who are as young as 14 that have been recruited over social media. And they're just basically told, as long as you can use a phone and understand the internet and you speak one of these languages, like either Chinese or Thai or Vietnamese or English or a combination of a couple of different ones, then yeah, that's all you need to do and you'll get really paid really good money. So once they're then brought into an SEZ or a casino complex, what often happens is that because they are sort of self-contained Chinese-run places, they then say you've got to do a couple of weeks quarantine as well, still now, even after most quarantines have been lifted. and then they'll have to pay things like we were saying we saw on the gate. They'll have other extra costs all the way. Their trafficker will have paid for pay for all their travel and everything, and just say, you know, pay us back out of your first paycheck. And then they'll arrive, they'll have to pay admin fees, they'll have to pay to have blood tests or blood taken and COVID tests and all these things. And what they don't know is all of this is being added up and added up and added up. So by the time they come out of the quarantine period, they're told, oh, that job we told you you had, that doesn't exist anymore. So you're going to have to work in this online scam. And a lot of people, most people at that point say, I'm not working in an online scam, I want to go home. And they say, well, the thing is that you now owe us $10,000. So because we've paid for XYZ. So it's your standard debt bondage situation, basically. And then what we were told by the guy that we interviewed in Laos, who'd been in there for 6 months, is that every month that you don't, you then are forced to sign a six-month minimum contract. But they tell you you can leave after 6 months. But on your first month, they'll say, oh, well, you didn't meet all your targets for scamming people this month. So we're going to subtract your room and board from what you, you know, from what you get paid. And then the next month, you know, you take even more money out of that because you still haven't met your targets. And it goes down and down and down until you start owing them even more money. So your debt is growing every month. And then it gets to 5.5 months and they say, yeah, you're not profitable. We're going to sell you to another company. And at that point, your 6 month contract starts all over again. So there are people who are just trapped in there for years on end because they get sold every couple of months. And every single time their contract resets. But because there's a kind of semblance of a some kind of legality, because there are contracts flying around and there seem to be people are getting paid something, it really confuses the police and authorities as well. So it makes it even harder to deal with. But yeah, once inside these places, they're often locked inside dorms where they're not allowed to leave the dorm buildings at all for the 6 months. They do everything, eat in there and everything. And they are tortured or threatened or beaten if they try to leave. People have told us that if they don't hit their targets or they try and take a photo or other small sort of, you know, infractions, they end up being put in solitary confinement, have food withheld. Like, people are jumping out of windows, just really awful stuff.
God, it's quite dark. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so I guess we went into it a bit before, but how does this scam actually work? How are they actually getting money from people? How are they making all of this cash?
The scams usually follow the same formula, basically, where you'll be in these compounds, and, you know, there's dozens and dozens of these compounds in dozens of cities across Southeast Asia now. And what will happen is within each compound, there's maybe like 10 dorm rooms on each floor, and each dorm room will be running a different type of scam. They usually follow a similar formula, where you'll sit down and they'll go into like a romance scam situation where you'll pretend to be a pretty Singaporean lady, basically, and you will use Facebook, you'll use WeChat, you'll use Tinder, basically any social media. They basically have data on potential marks that you can target online. And I guess these are probably pretty lonely middle-aged dudes that might be susceptible to a pretty lady speaking to them on the internet and may have a little bit of cash in their pocket. Say it's a guy from Laos, he'll be sitting there and his job will be to entice 7 men a day into the next stage. And what the plan is with each of these people is start building a relationship. And if they want to have like pictures or phone conversations, there is a pretty lady in the room that they can hand over the phone for. So they're all kind of like working together to make it quite seamless. The plan is to try to get them to invest in some kind of usually crypto scheme or some other type of investment. Sometimes it's gold, which is really big in that part of the world. And they're targeting people from everywhere. It depends on what language you speak. So it could be targeting Thai people, it could be targeting Chinese, it could be targeting Americans, Indians, anyone. Right, so if you're getting targeted online, there's a good chance that the people doing it are actually victims of slavery themselves, trying to push through this formula. And then they'll say, hey, listen, I've got this like great idea for making a bit of money. And what they'll often do is they'll replicate an actual crypto website, and they'll make it look exactly the same, and they'll send the link to it first and be like, oh yeah, this looks good, and they'll send over the link of the replica, and then people put money in. And it's the same, it's like as old as time, right? So they'll put a bit of money in and then they'll get that money back. So they maybe get a small return, like 20%, if they put in like $3,000 or $4,000. And then the guy's like, all right, well, I'm not being scammed, right? And then maybe even they start talking about marriage and it gets deeper. And they may put a bit more money in and again might get it back. And then they go for the big one. And then you have people putting in their entire life savings. And then all that happens is, boom, the website's gone, conversation ceases, that profile's shut down, and you don't hear from them again. And there's just no way to trace it. There's no way to know where your money's actually went, because they're actually quite sophisticated in how the kind of cyber aspect of it works. And they've got 7 of them going a day. And then they'll get another 7 the next day. So the amount of money these places are making is just enormous, which is why we know that this continues in known sites and compounds in busy cities, because the money's going to senior government, it's going to senior military people, because there's just so much cash flying around that it's really, really, there's not much incentive to stop poor people getting trafficked.
No one appears to be stopping them. I mean, you mentioned Ekapop and his Facebook group and rescuing up to 140 people at last count from these scams. Like, who is actually, is there anyone else helping with this effort? Is police or governments trying to get involved, or are these SEZs just completely off the map and sort of, yeah, unenforceable?
I think actually it's really complicated, because there are actually a lot of people who are really upset about this. There are lots of individual police and soldiers, especially in Thailand, actually, because there aren't really any of these SEZ scams that we know of within Thailand itself. But there's a lot of Thai victims in Laos and Myanmar and Cambodia. And there have actually been rescue missions, I say sort of like rescue missions, but like in order to be rescued normally, you would have had to pay some form of ransom first, and then the police go in and sort of make a big deal out of how they're rescuing people, but they've actually just negotiated a ransom. Mm. But there have been rescue missions where the Thai police and Thai military have persuaded the Cambodians to let them come over and try and get their own people out of a known compound. And then they've actually stood at the door for 8 hours, and the people running the compound are like, well, no, you're not coming in. And they have to negotiate a certain amount of money at the gate to go and get anybody out of there. And the Cambodian police are just standing there like, I'm sorry, we don't know what to do. And it's just completely insane, like how little power they have. And they're not willing to go against powerful people in their own country.
I think as well, it's important to realize just how powerful these organized crime groups are in Southeast Asia. And there's a lot of discussion about, like, you know, the cartels in Latin America and how huge they are and the power they have. But there's more money being made in, say, the drug trade and within organized crime in Southeast Asia. But it's not nearly as violent. And this is because they have such a monopoly over it all, because they are often not just like bribing the government. The governments of like Cambodia specifically, but also Laos and Myanmar is a whole other story. They're actually actively involved in this. There are high level officials who facilitate the trade of drugs, of weapons, of people, of timber for the entire region. And it's often these like Chinese organized crime groups are able to basically do whatever they want as long as China's kind of happy with them. So it works out as this like Belt and Road Initiative, like for the mafia, basically.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's hugely tragic. And yeah, I guess we don't do many calls to action at the end of our episodes, but in this case, please commission more stories by these guys, because what they're doing is amazing. Thanks so much for coming on the show, guys. Like, that was, wow,
thanks, man.
There's a lot of information there. And I think you've broken it down really, really amazingly. Hope to hear from you soon, and best of luck with the future stories from that trip, because... Yeah, there's a lot more to come, I would imagine.
Yeah. Thanks, man. Thanks a lot. It was great to see you.
Cheers.
And just a postscript to this episode. Since originally airing, Nathan and Lindsay did publish more from their investigation. And you can read their story about the criminal casino empire in the South China Morning Post. We've linked to that piece in our episode description. I'm Dina Temple-Rest. I'm the executive producer and host of the show. Sean Powers is our senior producer and marketing director. Will Jarvis is our producer. And Sarah Wyman is our writer-reporter. The show was mastered by Gabriella Glick. Our editing team is led by Karen Duffin and Lou Wolkowski. Darren Ankrum does our fact-checking. And our theme and original music compositions are by Ben Levingston. We also use music from Blue Dot Sessions. Special thanks this week to the Underworld Podcast. You can find their work anywhere you listen to podcasts and at underworldpod.com. And we'd love to hear from you. Please leave us a review and rating wherever you get your podcasts, or send us an email at clickhere@recordedfuture.com. Check out our website with details about our shows and our whole show catalog at clickhereshow.com. That's a wrap for this week. I'm Dina Temple-Rest. We'll be back on Tuesday.
Looking for more of the cybersecurity and intelligence coverage you get on Click Here? Then check out our sister publication, The Record, from Recorded Future News. You'll get breaking cyber news from reporters in New York, Washington, London, and Kyiv, among others. And you'll see for yourself why it attracts hundreds of thousands of page views every month. Just go to therecord.media.